Hello everyone and welcome to our 9th episode of Ruby India. Ruby India brings together curated content from and for the Indian Ruby community and friends. We do a regular newsletter highlighting content from people in the community, and one of the aims is to highlight people and their work, which has led us to start with this podcast. Today we have Yuva Kumar from Codemancers, all the way from Bangalore. Welcome, Yuva.
Hi guys.
So Yuva, can you tell us about yourself?
Yeah, so I have nearly 10 years of industrial experience. So let's start with how I got started and all. So
okay.
So initially I was working as an embedded engineer. So I was working for a company called ST Microelectronics.
So we were typically doing Symbian programming in C++. And I was writing device drivers for production testing. So that's how I started. So I was in Delhi for nearly 4.5 years. And then I joined a company in Bangalore called Saskin. And I worked for Saskin for nearly 3 years.
Yeah. You're originally from Delhi?
No, I am from Andhra.
Okay.
The first company which recruited me was based out of Delhi. So I had to go to Delhi. So while I was working for Saskin, I used to brainstorm. So that's how I got introduced to Ruby and all. So we were working on one of our side projects called Show and Tell, which is a discussion board for designers. So we were mainly hacking on Ruby on Rails during weekends. So during those days, I think it was in 2011, and during those days, I was pretty new to this whole Ruby Rails ecosystem. And it was really difficult because in the weekends I was doing Ruby on Rails, and in the weekdays I was doing C++ drivers and whatnot. So there used to be quite a bit of context switch. So that's how I got started. Then after 1 year we realized that this is not going anywhere. So I think we should do this Ruby thing full time. So that's when I quit Saskin and I co-founded Codemancers along with him.
So Saskin, what exactly did you work for there?
Saskin is a services company. We are doing S40 driver development for Nokia. I was mainly working in USB domain. You guys, I think everyone is familiar with USB. So I was working on USB standards. Mainly for OTG. I don't know how many guys know about OTG. You can connect two phones and transfer stuff. So
you've been working for 4 years now in Ruby? Four, five.
I think officially it's been nearly 3 years since Codemancers started.
Mm-hmm.
So my experience with Ruby and Rails is 3 years. But I've been dabbling with Ruby before also. I think it'll be 4 years. So mm-hmm. Initially, this is how it started. I started learning Ruby, and then I wrote some scripts for bash completions. And that's how it started. So it's nearly 4 years.
And when you were starting, how did you meet Hemant, or did you interact with the Bangalore community that time?
So Hemant and I, we studied in the same college, NIT Trichy. So we are playing Age of Empires, and that's how we got introduced to each other. So I knew Hemant right from my college days. Just that he was working from Chennai and I was working from Delhi. And when I moved to Bangalore, he also moved to Bangalore. So that's when it all started. We had more time. We used to meet in person and discuss. So, and slowly, I started going to Ruby community events along with Hemant.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I got introduced to Ruby community also. In fact, one of the first meetups which I attended was in ThoughtWorks. Agile was pretty hot during those days. So I went to ThoughtWorks office in Diamond District. A lot of Ruby guys and Agile taking small sessions in some room. It was very interesting.
I think, but now there are lots of companies who host Bangalore Ruby meetups, right?
Yeah, That's true, yeah.
How were your experiences initially with Bangalore community and the Ruby community in general? I mean, what got you more interested related to the Ruby community?
So my experience was pretty good. So the thing which got me interested was you know, like the ability to work from home and how good the Ruby as a language was. Because I was writing C, C++, so it's not that I don't like it. I still like it. But I felt that when it comes to scripting front-end, they're not good languages.
You were doing front-end from C? I mean,
no, not front-end. I was writing drivers earlier, right? But what I'm saying is the syntactic sugar of Ruby was pretty good. It got me interested initially. And then I attended RubyConf in India, which happened in Bangalore. So that was the time when I got to meet like a lot of entrepreneurs, startups which are based out of Bangalore. So that got me really interested in the Ruby community. And there were like a lot of discussions also. And this was like first of its kind, which happened in Bangalore. And nothing of that sort was there in embedded domain. So that was like a pretty good selling point for me. In embedded, like not a lot of developers interact and talk about core technologies. Because most of the time it's all proprietary.
So
you can't talk about what things are happening. And
I think this is another good topic for discussion about what are your thoughts on coming from a community which is kind of closed, like you said, in embedded community or say the C community, and coming into the Ruby community. Apart from the openness, what differences do you see in the community that is there?
So first of all, to start with, in embedded there is no community. So
okay.
Anything on top of it is obviously good, right? So that's what I feel. Yeah, but talking about community-wise, I think Ruby community in Bangalore is very supportive. So I used to talk to people when I knew nothing about Ruby and Ruby on Bangalore. And the way, you know, like they suggested me like how to go about it and tips and stuff, like they're like pretty good. One of the first persons whom I met was Pratik Dayal.
Yeah.
He was running Muzigo at the time. So I was really inspired by him because that was actually a two-man team when I met him. And he was kind of, you know, like fighting his own battle.
Yeah.
You don't get to see those kind of things in embedded because the initial investment itself
is a lot. Yep.
I would not. So you don't get to see such people.
Yeah, so after you started with CodeMancers, you started going a lot to the Bangalore Ruby community, right?
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about that? Seeing it transition in the last 3 years, what are your thoughts about it?
I think Bangalore community has grown a lot. In fact, I think right now, I think the way the number of events have come up in Bangalore Ruby community are more than what I have seen when I came into, you know, like this Ruby world and when I co-founded CodeMancers. Earlier, I think like there was only one event, the monthly meetup. Now I think there are like more events. Like we have monthly meetups and then code retreats.
Yeah.
I think Multiness is doing that.
Mm-hmm.
After Prakash Murthy came in, like I think he started like a bunch of localized Ruby things, like Garden City, Beckham Ruby, yeah, and all that stuff. Yeah. So I think over a period of 3 years, I think it has grown a lot.
Mm-hmm.
There's been even a steady stream of events where you can go and interact with people. It's just that, like, I feel that, like, the bunch of people who were there when I started going to Ruby community, I think most of them are not there. But I get to see, like, pretty new things, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
I get to meet a lot of new people. So that's a good thing. So, yeah, it no means I think like it has down, but I think it's on track. It's going pretty good. That's what I feel.
Cool. So Another thing like that interests me is about how you started with Hemant CodeMansus. How did you go about co-founding it, or how did you two get together and think about? Because you were not in that domain already.
Oh yeah.
How did you think about, okay, we should start CodeMansus, and then how did CodeMansus grow up to what it is right now?
Oh yeah. So how it all started was I was hacking on Ruby on Rails along with Hemant. So we were doing this product called Show and Tell. It was like a discussion forum for designers where you can upload your mockups, and we can, you know, like have discussions around mockups with project managers, with the whole team. That was the initial idea.
Is this live? Because I think I heard about it.
We didn't pursue it afterwards because of different priorities. Yeah. So that's how I got introduced to Ruby on Rails. So what we were doing initially was I used to pair program with Hemant during weekends, and he used to write most of the code, and like I used to just sit and, you know, like see what's going on and all that stuff. Then I bought a laptop, and generally I commute to office. That's thing. So it used to take nearly 1 hour for me to reach from home to office. So I bought this triple PC, and I used to learn Ruby on Rails while commuting. So this kind of, you know, like setup went on for nearly 1 year. And then we got the product to a certain stage where we thought that, you know, this product is going okay, but we need to put more time and effort into it. And nobody will buy the product if we don't have a name for ourselves. So that's when we started thinking about co-founding CodeMansus. So we thought that having a company with a name is better when you're selling any product, because nobody will trust the design data, right?
Yep.
So what we realized was like we should have a company and it should have a good name, and then from the company if you can sell a product, that'll be much more effective than directly going into the market. And
so initially you were not a services company?
No, I mean, this was the motive behind starting CodeMansus, but then we started as a services company because, yeah, we didn't have any funding or like any money. So
right.
That's how we started. But we were pursuing Show and Tell initially, but then we thought that, yeah, we should go full services. So we dropped the product.
Okay.
Yeah. But now, there'll always be an itch to, you know, like do products and all, but
every company thinks about it.
Yeah, but what we feel is like everything takes time. I mean, like even running a business, even though it's services.
Services in itself is a product.
It's not a lot of time. And then if you want to do open source and all, then I don't think we'll have any bandwidth for another product.
And how many people are there right now in your company?
Right now there are 10 in total.
So in 3 years you've grown to 10 people. Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. So the next question that I have is about your experiences with Ruby community events. So these may be like the code retreat that you specified, or the meetups, or RubyConf India. What are your experiences over the years, or maybe workshops and those kind of things? So what are your experiences with those?
Yeah. So
also I think you took a workshop in GCRC.
Yeah, I did the workshop in GCRC.
Thoughts about those also?
Yeah. That happened recently. Yeah, so coming to, I think the community events, honestly, I think like I reduced a bit of my participation because of like a lot of personal things coming into my life. But having said that, I'm kind of happy because one of the important things that I see in this community even is like meeting my friends whom I never get to meet and meeting new people.
Right.
So last community event which I really enjoyed was GCRC, in fact, because we had like a bit of booze and like I get to meet like a lot of people. So
you also get to meet your own team.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's where we met, right? So yeah, so that way I think yeah, those are good. But if you talk specifically about experiences, yeah, other than that, there's nothing much. I mean, generally like talks do happen and I attend some of the talks which are interesting, but I don't attend most of the talks.
Mm-hmm.
So it's maybe that it sounds trivial to me or I don't have that much interest.
You've been to code retreats or I don't know. They also, there was also some another event, right? Which where you, some kind of working on a language and creating some, any different project idea. I don't know. So there are lots of events happening in Bangalore.
Yeah. Earlier those events happened along with
code retreat.
Not code retreat, with Ruby meetups itself.
Okay.
In the past, like when I was attended a couple of Ruby meetups in the Bangalore table office. So the format was in the morning, we used to have talks and then have lunch. And afterwards, we used to, you know, like sit with random people and play a program and have some open source and all. It was not exactly like a bug mash, but it's something like, hey, I have an idea, so why can't we stick together and work on this idea kind of thing.
I think now it has changed a bit because in the morning you have one meetup, in the afternoon there's some other meetup.
Yeah.
Lots of events happening.
Yeah, so earlier it used to be like, yeah, I'm like, okay, let's do one thing in the morning, let's do another thing in the afternoon. But that didn't sustain for a long time, so... I think what sustained over a period of time is, yeah, and like the Ruby meetups which happen every month, then Ruby retreats and yeah. So nowadays, like, yeah, we don't do a lot of coding when we in the meetups and all. So I don't have like a lot of experience with code retreat, but I can't really comment about it.
Cool.
But bug matches used to be good. Where you go and like sit and you know like yeah. There is one Ruby on Rails bug mash some time back where people just went and looked sad.
Did it work out well? Because we tried once and I people got into it, but
no, it might not work out well if we don't have enough mentors. Because one of the main problems in starting bug mash is like guiding new people like which bug to pick, right? And if they're not good people who can't guide others in the particular direction, yeah, then obviously it won't work out.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What another question that I would like to ask is about. So your company has been producing a lot of open source projects and gems like. Say RBKit, Aspect Mode, there's Invoker. So all of these different projects that you have, would you like to speak about those a bit?
Oh yeah, sure. So we have like, I think like two main open source projects right now. So one is RBKit. We're developing it as a tool with a threaded to profile Ruby programs, Ruby applications as such. We're mainly using it to profile Rails applications.
Mm-hmm.
So right now it supports memory profiling, but we are in plans to add support for CPU profiling. So the architecture of RBKit is pretty interesting. So what we have here is in the backend, like you plug in RBKit gem and they just say start profiling. And what the gem does is it will basically collect all the traces as and when any object gets created or any object gets garbage collected. And then it will send all that information over the wire in zero MQ sockets. And then we have arbitrary front end written in Qt. That will listen to all these events on ZMQ sockets. And it will fetch them and petition them in a nice
display.
Yeah. And there are many features to it. One of the killer features is taking heap snapshots. So at any particular point of time, you can get a list of all the objects which are created by Ruby and which are there on the heap. So
right.
Basically, you can take like multiple heap snapshots and see the difference, see where objects are leaking, where objects are being allocated, but not all the
And this project is something that you initially worked on, but extracted into a gem afterwards from an actual project that you were working, right?
No. This didn't.
So you're trying to profile it. You were trying to profile some of your application, and then this came up, right?
No, I mean like other gems came up like that. But not Arbigate. So Arbigate started because there is no such tool in Ruby world which has an appeal which is similar to YourKit.
Mm-hmm.
YourKit is for profiling Java apps, I think. So there's no such tool. So what we thought was there are some tools already. If we talk about gems which are there for profiling, we already have a bunch of them, right?
Correct.
Game has that stack prof, Arbitrace, Arbiline prof, Ruby tool. But none of them. It needs a bit of work in order to integrate those gems and then extract information out of it. So what we are trying to do here is make this process really simple and try to make it more usable. That way.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing with Arbikit is since we started with memory profiling. The C-level hooks, they were not there before 2.1, I guess. So Arbigate won't work with Ruby versions prior to 2.1. So that's the thing.
And then there is
another
project.
Yeah, Invoker was started as a process management tool. So earlier we were all using POW, but the whole setup of POW was bit tricky and it was a bit slow also sometimes.
Right.
And it was very specialized for Ruby applications only, right? So that's we had this idea of why can't we write something simple which is mainly used, manage all the processes in the typical Rails application. And then you can optionally, start, restart some of the processes and all. And afterwards, we added support for .dev domains also, because there is a need that a lot of people do this subdomain based development locally.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's how it got started. But one of the killer features of Invoker is it's not Ruby or React specific. So you can run, you can use it with
you can
applications,
correct,
and all that stuff. Yeah, which is not there with POW and all. Yeah.
So I think I had seen this before, in one of your job postings and one of what you specified. I think is what you say to your new hires is extracting projects out of your life projects.
Yeah.
Or extracting those in open source gems. So is this something that, you advocate a lot or do a lot?
Yeah, we do a lot actually. But so if you take about other projects, right, there is one gem called RapidFire, which is used to create dynamic surveys in Rails app.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was extracted out of one of our existing projects. And then we have like one more gem called invoicing. So that is used for giving the basic layout where you can write your own invoices and send it out to your clients and all. So that was extracted from one of the existing projects. It was actually four, but then like a lot of ideas have been taken out from one of our existing projects and then we put it in. And there are like other small gems also, like Rails widget, where we wanted to have custom validators, dates, arrays, hashes, and all that stuff. And then, generally, we do integrations with mail clients. So in the past, we released some gems like Rails mail gem, and all. Though they're not maintained actively, because
but those are lots of gems that you have released.
So, but rapid fire and invoicing, we constantly develop these two gems in addition to Invoker and Arbitrate. Nowadays, like a lot of, I think most of the people at Codemasters hack on Arbitrate because of the scope of the project and the amount of work it demands. So like, a lot of people work on Arbitrate inside Codemasters. So that's one of the good things, right? Because if you're working on client projects through and through, you'll get bored after certain time. So it's better to have these open source projects going on. And the good kicker is if other people, if Ruby community in particular appreciates the open source work which you're doing, then that's a good incentive, I guess.
True. And so let's say like these two projects that you worked on, and these were extracted from client projects, right? So how do you, I mean, speak with your client about it or convince him that, okay, this part of the project we are going to open source? Because you're working and I think you will be billing the time that you're working on it, right?
Yeah, initially that's how it starts, but
the initial part, like saying that, okay, this is the part we want to extract in open source.
Okay, so mostly the convincing happens based on the value which we get out of it. So in the case of invoicing, so initially, like the way we convinced for, you know, giving dedicated time for invoicing was this. We told our client that, hey, look, like you wanted a solution like this, but there is already a solution which is there in the market, or which doesn't have all the features which you require, but it has like, you know, like a subset of the features which you require. So why don't you give us time so that we can add the features which you want into this gem and release it as a part of, you know, like the Ruby community. And then you'll also have features, and these features can be used by third party also. So we kind of, you know, like negotiate in such a way that there is a win-win situation, that if we have to, you know, like develop, like let's say like X set of features in-house, so that will take like, let's say like 1 week, 1.5 weeks or so. But
right,
you can use this gem, so that will save you some time. At the same time, like the features which you add on top of it will release it as open source. So you'll get what you want in a week, but at the same time, we'll get a chance to, you know, like release these new features as open source. So that's how we convinced it for invoicing them. So, and the client was like pretty okay with it because the time saved is the dollars saved. So
I think this is important for other companies also, because this brings out a value for, first of all, your company itself, your client, as well as I mean, this has a very great value for a company in the Ruby community.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
but not all the time like we get this kind of luxury. And initially when we get it out, one of the hard challenges is to maintain it, like I mean, of course, we are on in order to, you know, like take time out of your busy schedule and maintain. So I think, yeah, that's where I think, yeah, the community comes into the picture and all. So one thing which I actively look into is gems released by other companies and all. So that really interests me. And in order to grow as an ecosystem, I think we should more use gems released by our community and see, you know, like how we can help and
stuff. Yeah. So, I would like to know about is, what kind of setup do you have? Or so this is something that we like to know from everyone, because this is something which is not discussed generally with all. What kind of setup do you have for your laptop, your shell, your editor, day-to-day coding, what do you use and all those things?
So since I mainly do Rails development, I have like basically three things going on. So one is Emacs. I use Emacs as a text editor.
Oh yeah.
And then terminal to run Invoker and.
Does everyone use Emacs at Codemancers? Because like Hemant used to.
No, it's a bit opinionated. We don't restrict everyone.
Okay.
So a bunch of people use Vim, and Hemant, Deepak, and myself, we use Emacs. And then Amitava, Emil, and Kashyap, they use Vim.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a fair division. And then we have a couple of designers. So they use Sublime most of the time.
Right.
And yeah. So that's about it. So there's a fair divide between Emacs and Vim. So as long as they're productive, yeah, we're cool with it. And since we don't do like a lot of pair programming, this is not a hurdle as such that someone else and like suddenly you can't type because the other person is using Vim and all. So
yeah.
So whenever we do pair programming, it's mostly about brainstorming and talking about ideas and how to arrive on a solution.
Right.
That's good. Yeah, so coming back to the tools, yeah, so I use Emacs and then Terminal mainly to run Invoker and, you know, like use Git and commit code. I prefer Git command line rather than using Magit, which is an Emacs extension. And then I have Firefox going on. That's all. So I use MacBook Air, but I'm not even a power user of MacBook Air. Because these three tools which I use mainly, this setup pretty much works on Ubuntu also.
Right.
So I just use MacBook Air just because I have to use it. So I don't have any apps already installed.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much what it is. So coming to Emacs setup, I like using Auth mode a lot. That helps in, even though we use Pivotal Tracker, I use Auth mode in order to organize like what tasks I need to do and all. Mm-hmm. I try to clock everything. So Auth mode has got pretty good support for clocking the tasks which you're doing.
Okay.
So without leaving your editor, let's say like I have an interview with Ruby India. So when it starts, I clock, like when it ends, I clock up. So yeah, I try to maintain and see, it gives summaries for, you know, like week and month also. So you can see like how much time is spent for client and all that stuff.
That's true.
So that's kind of cool. Yeah.
Do you use it for invoicing also? That doesn't.
No. Our admin takes care of all that stuff. So.
Right.
So, cool. Earlier, I had a LaTeX integration.
Mm-hmm.
I used to send, this was back in the days when I was working for HTML clients as well. So I worked with
Manolitech. Wow.
No, Argonaut has this integration that you write. It's similar to Mark though. So you write all your notes in Argonaut and then it export it into like text file, ASP.doc or Matex also. So it automatically exports into that format. And then all you have to do is like run that PDF LaTeX and suddenly you have like pretty good, nice looking documents in PDF. So, yeah, so that's pretty cool actually.
So, we are running out of time and there's one last question that we have is about like to know about, is about, so you spoke about setup and tools for yourself, but what tools does your company use for say communication and workflow or project management?
Okay.
And what kind of process do you follow for a project?
Okay, yeah. So, since we believe a lot in remote working, we use HipChat as our internal communication tool. So, got nice integrations with.
How many of you are remote?
Hello?
Yeah, how many of you are remote?
Right now, Amitava, Hemant, these two people are like, they work remotely. But most of the people work from home. So right now I think I'm the only person at office. So everyone pretty much works from home. Emil almost works from home.
That's the case with us.
He works from home sometimes. Girish almost works from home. So we don't ask them where they are right now. So it might be possible that they are working out of Bangalore or they are working out of their hometown and all. There's no restriction there. So, yeah.
But you need to, like, work at a specific time?
Yeah.
Or even that is not?
Yeah, we generally follow timing so that there's a bit of overlap with clients also. So that, not that, you know, like, you come and work in the morning and go away and, like, you don't have any interaction with clients. So we kind of manage time in such a way that there's a good amount of overlapping when clients come online and we go offline so that we can discuss and do that sprint planning and all that stuff.
Okay.
It varies from project to project. That's it. So we use HipChat a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a dedicated room for all these notifications. So whenever someone pushes any code, we get a notification.
Yeah.
And then, So coming to the typical workflow, internally for project management, we use Pivotal Tracker, but generally like clients have their own preference. Some clients prefer Jira, some clients prefer Trello and all that stuff. But given a choice, we prefer Pivotal Tracker. And then we use mainly Balsamiq for doing like mockups. So Girish and Sujit, they use Balsamiq for doing mockups and all. But they don't have to do any high fidelity mockups. And then people think that's pretty much common everywhere for committing the code and all. And we have our own Jenkins setup which pulls code from GitHub, runs tests on them and then it will post back the status to GitHub that okay these tests passed and these tests failed and all that stuff. Some clients have their own CA setup also, like one of our clients uses Circle CA. We have proper workflow, but we don't restrict clients or force clients to use our workflow. So as long as they have their own tools, we're kind of cool with it.
And what do you use generally for deployment? Heroku, Rackspace?
Some clients have their own EC2 instances. Some clients use Heroku. Again, it varies from project to project. Yeah. We have for code managers as such, like we have like a couple of dedicated servers in Germany, so we pretty much manage everything.
Mm-hmm.
So we use so those are like Ubuntu instances, and like we mainly use Capistrano scripts for deployment.
Okay. And these scripts are open source or like internal?
No, internal.
Okay.
So that's, yeah.
And
so as long as you have this tools which support the complete development workflow process, there's no problem.
Cool. And what is the general workflow for, let's say, adding a new feature? What all happens for that?
Okay, so generally, like clients come up with the requirements, they put it in Trello or Jira. So, so there'll be sprint planning where we discuss, okay, like what needs to be done as a part of this feature and all. And if there's a UX flow involved, then we involve designers. So that they can come up. It happens for some of the features, it doesn't happen for all the features.
Right.
Typically, once the flow is sorted out, then developer picks it up, like branches out and hacks onto it. We don't follow like 100% TDD. Because it's sometimes we don't know like how to approach a particular feature. In those cases, like we follow TDD. But other times, I think, yeah, we straight away like get the right code and like the right tests along with it. And it's a mix of TDD and non-TDD. Because like sometimes we write code and then we write tests. Or sometimes like we write tests and then we write code and all. But the important bottom line is like make sure that, yeah, there is proper test coverage for the code which you write.
Mm.
And then like we push the code to a branch and then we open pull requests. And then generally like on all the projects we work in pairs so that people can give feedback. So other people can jump in and review the PR and suggest some changes if required and all that stuff. So once that is done, we only merge PRs if the build is green. So then like we merge the PRs and then it's up to the client to
so everything goes through a review, code review.
Yeah, everything has to go through code review. Yeah.
Nothing goes to master.
No. we don't commit to master at all.
Thanks.
I mean, if it's like one line will change or something like that, then generally people discuss before committing to master, but it doesn't happen frequently. I'm pretty sure it doesn't even happen once in a month. So that's about it. So we have processes in place, but at the same time, we make sure that these processes are not obstructing the productivity of people.
That's something which
the brand, you know, like keep a balance.
Yeah. In our company, if someone commits, like everyone from the team will pounce on them, like, why did you commit to master? Yeah.
So,
yeah, I've run out of questions and I think we are also running out of time. One last thing I would like to hear from you, or any suggestions for not just people, but companies in general about. So you have a very good base of this thing. You have a very good base of open sourcing projects, or your team interacts a lot with the community. So one thing that would be nice to hear from you is how all of this brings value to your company, and how other people can also, build up on this value, and why this building up of this value is important.
Yeah, I think open source contributions is like one of the important things which we don't actively pursue. The reason why we should put emphasis on open source is like, I think that's one of the good ways to learn from others. And as long as you get your work for a particular project and go home, the learning is there, but it's not so much. So that's one of the important reasons that I believe that you get a lot of exposure if you do open source. And all. So mm-hmm. I generally like encourage people to do open source because of this reason. Another reason is it gives a good exposure to the company as a whole, that whenever you pitch to a new client and all, you can say that, hey, we did these things, and like community received it pretty well and all. So you know, the effort which you have to put in order to sell yourself also reduces drastically. So this is like a marketing gimmick, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I think at the same time, I think like extracting gems out of the projects which you are working on is something I think which needs to be pursued actively, because lot of gems which I've seen which were used are all like they're all have been developed like this. So I think
this also helps you in hiring, right?
Hello?
This also helps you in hiring or getting new people.
Yeah, I was getting to that. So a lot of these gems like which are there out in the market, like I think they started like something like this. So once you get a gem out and like other people find it useful and all, like yeah, they'll start contributing to it. And you get your name out in the community, and yeah. So even when you go out for hiring, I think like yeah, you don't have to hunt for people. Like over a period of time, people will start applying to you. And, yeah, so there are like a lot of benefits as such. So what I would encourage all the companies is go out, do lots of open source. Yeah. Even like it's something very trivial also, right? You'll never know that how many people are in need of like that trivial functionality as such. So nowadays people advocate and like they have that guilt inside them that they start open source and they don't perceive it in the long run. But I feel that's okay. Nobody writes software which will last for. And that's the right software is that for
someone else can pick up. Yeah. Someone else can pick it up, yeah.
Yeah. Even if no one else picks up, it dies also. Yeah. That kind of helps it. Yeah. It's not like Linux, right? But it will go on for 20 years or so, yeah.
Sure. So, yeah.
But at the same time, I think
that would.
I think like extracting the open source projects out of your working projects is a good thing, but at the same time, I think the effort should be more from the individual rather than from the company, because if there is no initiative, then yeah, there won't be
any. We can force on it.
Yeah.
We can force someone.
So someone has to, you know, like kind of take that initiative and say that, dude, I'm going to work on this, and then. And then you know, like get the basic initial version out. Then, so that's one of the ways, you know, like that initial hurdle, right? That inertia. Like once if you cross it, I'm pretty sure that there will be people out there who will be willing to help you out with features or bug fixes, or even, you know, like documentation fixes.
That's true.
Yeah. So I feel that, you know, like it's. People can somehow overcome that initial hurdle, I think. Yeah, that's a good way to start. There's no need to think in long term, but yeah.
Right. So we are coming to end of our questions, and I think also our time. So I would like to thank once again, you all for making time for this podcast. I think right now, you are in office and you must have work, but thanks for making time again for Ruby India.
I think I have to thank you guys because you guys are doing a pretty good job with Ruby India, like getting the weekly out and I mean getting the newsletter out and
me.
I think volume podcast. No, I understand like there's a lot of effort involved in these kind of activities.
But yeah, we get to chat in this way. Interesting stuff that keeps happening with lots of people.
Okay, yeah. But anyway, like I think I have to thank you guys because yeah, it's a good opportunity for me also.
Yeah, so
thank you guys.
Thanks again.
Okay.
Bye.